everyone. Welcome to another episode of Ditto. We're super excited to have you here today. Matt, how are you doing?
Hi, Ash. I am doing great today. I know I mentioned this to you off camera. What do you even say? Off recording? Before we recorded?
Offline. I don't know.
I was able to, offline maybe, yeah. Get up and do a hike this morning, and it's one of my like all-time favorite things to do. And so the day's just a little bit better when you can, you know, quote unquote, win the morning. But anyways, how are you? How are you feeling? How's soccer? How's life? How's everything?
Soccer's good. Life's good. We have an off day today, and I feel like similar to you, I didn't get to go on a beautiful hike, but. Jeff and I went for a nice walk around our neighborhood, and the temperature was perfect. It's like the season right before it gets way too humid to even step outside. So we're enjoying like the last like few cool mornings and cool evenings that we have before it gets too hot. So yeah, it was really nice to get a nice walk in for a change.
Do you have any views of mountains? Hills where from where you're at, because I know that like the Blue Ridge Mountains and stuff go through there. Are you close to there?
Yeah, Jeff likes to call them hills. Everyone around here calls them mountains. But it is really pretty. Like, we have a pretty good view off our front porch of some apple orchards and some farmland and stuff. So, and the sunsets here are really pretty. So, can't complain. It's very different than Utah, but it's still really pretty.
Right. Yeah. I remember having similar experiences in Oxford, Ohio, when we lived there, when I was teaching at Miami University. Go Red Hawks. Love and honor. The sunsets and sunrises, you feel like you're like eye level with them.
Mm-hmm.
And they just light up the sky. Some of the best sunsets ever were when we were in Ohio, which was so random. I didn't think that, you know, going in living in Ohio, but it was so beautiful. Anyways.
Yeah, that's cool. Nice. Yeah. Well, good.
I have a joke for you to start
off. Okay, let's hear it.
This is courtesy of the one and only Ronald Moore. He is my father.
Oh, nice. I thought you were going to say Ronald McDonald for a second.
No, not Ronald McDonald. No, not Ronald McDonald. This is in fact a literal dad joke because it came from my dad. So if you're listening, Dad, thank you for the wonderful joke. Ashley. What do you call the rear entrance to a cafeteria?
The rear entrance to a cafeteria? I'm not sure.
Bacteria.
Bacteria.
That's good,
nice.
Right?
Yeah, that is a good one.
Nice
joke, Ronald.
Way to go, Ronald.
Is that a new one, or is that just one from your childhood that you remembered?
No, he just texted me that the other day. In fact, he texted me two, and I'm going to save the second one for our next episode because why would I give all of his tricks away on one episode? But
does he know that you do dad jokes on the podcast? Is that why? Was he helping you out?
Definitely, he might have. In fact, he listens to the podcast. I don't think he's missed an episode.
Nice.
As soon as he texted me that joke, I'm like, oh. That's going on the podcast. Thank you.
Yeah, for and sure. So, yeah, he's probably like, oh, Matt's jokes are declining.
Horrible.
I need to help him out.
Gosh. I do. The last like three, I feel like I've been really struggling. So thank you, Ronald, once again.
Yeah, that definitely was a really good one. So thanks for sharing.
Yeah, of course. Always.
Awesome. Well, I'm excited to get into our conversation today. Matt, would you like to... introduce us to our topic today?
Yeah, of course. This is an awesome topic. I don't want to dive like into this for the next 45 minutes to an hour because you could easily do that with this one. I want to go real application with this one. So my hope is in talking about what we're going to be talking about today, Ash, that athletes, coaches, parents, whomever, can walk away going, ooh, this is what I can do to strengthen this mentally. So that's kind of the intent with this. So I want to start off with asking you, actually. We've heard this term mental toughness before.
Mm-hmm.
It's such an abstract, ambiguous term.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember first hearing it in grad school. And I thought at the time, like, oh, this is what it means. But then I heard another definition of it from someone else, and another definition of it, and another definition, and another definition. And they're all right, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there's all components of it, I think, that make up what is quote-unquote mental toughness. But when you hear that word, Ash, what comes to your mind? Or that term, mental toughness?
I feel like my perception of that word has changed a lot over the years. So I feel like a while ago it was probably like something that's really good if you had that mental toughness, something that not everyone has, kind of like macho. And I don't know, just able to like push through hard things. Mm-hmm. I think that's kind of what I originally think of.
Resilience, being able to push through hard things, I think is a huge part of that for me as well. I have heard, especially from some coaches over the years, describe you're either mentally tough or you're not. Mm. And my very passionate and sometimes loud refrain to that is, well, what the heck am I doing then as a sports psychology professional or a mental performance coach? Like, the whole idea of me working with your athletes or you as a coach is to systematically help you become better mentally. Mm-hmm. So you're either strong or you're not, or you're either fast or you're not, or you're either flexible or you're not. Like, no, you can get faster. You can get stronger. You can get more flexible. And it's the same with mental toughness. You can become more mentally tough, but what is it? And I think, like you said, it's resilience, it's self-confidence, it's motivation. It's a bunch of things. One cornerstone for me that I've found to be really true over the years in my studies is when I think of somebody who's mentally tough, it's the ability to have perspective and knowing when to lock in and when to not lock in on that perspective, especially during trying, challenging times. Bringing perspective in those moments is such a mental toughness component or orientation.
Yeah.
I remember working in the military and they had this wonderful acronym. And so if you're listening to this, go ahead and write this down. It's P-I-I-P. They called it PIP. P-I-I-P. And it stands for put it into perspective. And that was the whole idea. Is when you inevitably are going through something tough, something challenging, pause, put it into perspective. And that for me is so beneficial for so many reasons. Mm-hmm. But one of the overarching reasons, in my humble opinion, why that is so beneficial from a psychological perspective is your slowly dissipating the fog that is anxiety and that is stress. Because oftentimes, and I was doing a bunch of reading about this as of recent, and I've loved kind of some of the stuff I've come across. Oftentimes, more often than not, it's the movement of the mind rather than like the world around us that causes our stress and our anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
So it's perspective, AKA also interpretation is a huge part of this. And so if we can pause, if we can stop, and sometimes that's for 0.2 seconds, and sometimes that's for 10 minutes, just depending on how much time you have, and answer this question, like, how am I viewing this? Where is my perspective? And again, more often than not, when we're going through stress and or anxiety, our perspective is very narrowly focused, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's about the thing that's causing the stress or the anxiety. And so if we can kind of zoom out, right? Like, sometimes we're on like our iPhone and we're going like this, we're zooming in to see the face, like zoom back out and see the whole picture. It just provides so much more ease and centeredness and presence and less anxiety and less stress. And so that's the skill set that I want to be able to touch on that's going to directly influence, in my humble opinion, one's mental toughness. And so my hope is you coaches, especially and you athletes, when you hear this term again, hopefully you can walk away going, ooh, that person has perspective. Or I want to help my athletes, my team, have perspective aka mental toughness.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we tracking okay?
Yep.
Not too much. So what does this look like from like a theoretical or scientific perspective? Of course, right, we got to bring some of this in. In this community of kind of evidence-based science, peer-reviewed stuff, they call this reappraisal. It's essentially a fancy word for perspective. And even more specifically, interpreting and reinterpreting. Mm-hmm. And so there's a couple theories I want to just quickly glance over. We don't need to go into these in depth. I'm not sitting in class and teaching you all about these theories and testing you on them. The first one is called cognitive reappraisal theory. It's a wonderful theory. I think it was first researched in like the 60s by some folks of the last name Lazarus and Alford, if you're curious about who these people are that actually founded or authored this theory. And it's a reappraisal model, if you will, where it's really about the emotional regulatory strategic process and how individuals interpret a situation, or in this case, reinterpret a situation. Okay. Some newer research about cognitive reappraisal theory comes from Gross and John. That was in the early 2000s. And they kind of refined the theory and brought more of the reappraisal into the affective component of this, especially how that is affecting psychological interpretation of it. And really a huge part of this as well, from an emotional standpoint, is this taking away of suppression of emotions. So instead of viewing emotions as bad or even good, we're just very non-judgmentally accepting the emotional experience. We're not hiding, we're not avoiding really anything. And as a result of that, the reappraisal and reinterpretation of it starts to come kind of into effect. And so, you know, what could this look like in sport? Let's say an athlete is benched during a really important game. You want to be out there, but for whatever reason, the coach benches you. Without reappraisal, if you're cognitively going through this as an athlete, something might be, I'm worthless, coach doesn't believe in me. So there's anger and shame and decreased motivation, most likely, right?
Mm-hmm.
With reappraisal, the cognitive processes might be, ooh, this is an opportunity to observe, to grow, and ultimately to be ready again when I'm called upon. So there's acceptance, there's focus, there's resilience, and there's perspective. And so in performance psychology, cognitive reappraisal theory is wonderful because it leads to emotional regulation. It preserves energy, like especially mental energy, because when we're stuck in those stressful, anxiety-ridden, cognitively oriented moments, there's a lot of energy being taken, and you can feel it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so when we can reappraise and reinterpret and have perspective, we're gaining that energy back. It also, like I mentioned, enhances resiliency and long-term well-being, and so stress isn't taking over as much. Anxiety isn't taking over as much. This theory is wonderful for many reasons, but it's linked to so many things, like wonderful things like self-efficacy and pursuing goals successfully, and also interpersonal functioning. And so rather than viewing your coach or your teammates as horrible and mean, you're viewing them as individuals wanting your best interest for the team or maybe individually. And so in theory, your relationships are going to be that much better.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first theory. And I'm going to have some of your thoughts, of course, on this from actual real-world application, Ashley. So here we go. Here's the second one. It's called reversal theory. Very similar. It's in my opinion, kind of a dumbed-down version of cognitive reappraisal theory. But nonetheless, really great. And so instead of really reappraising or reinterpreting their, quote-unquote, reversing between or switching between different psychological states. And so flipping between opposing motivational states based on the context, meaning, and personal interpretation. So the core idea of reversal theory is, especially when it comes to arousal, that can be emotional arousal, psychological arousal, let's just say emotions and thoughts are going up. Arousal itself isn't good or bad. It's just how we interpret it that matters. And so we can reverse or reinterpret depending on our motivational state. So why does this matter in performance psychology? Well, for a lot of reasons, but it encourages emotional flexibility. And I love that term, flexibility, instead of toughness. You know me, I tend to use that more so, whether it's mental flexibility, emotional flexibility. It just paints a more adaptable picture, which I think is more helpful for a lot of reasons. It helps us to reframe stress and anxiety. So rather than trying to get rid of anxiety and stress, which we can never do, sorry, folks, let's just change our relationship with it. And that is a wonderful, healthy, beautifully beneficial approach to have. And then it really supports kind of this adaptive motivation across especially high pressure environments. And so you're able to add depth with goal setting and motivation and emotional regulation and all of these wonderful things. Okay. So there are theories. There's some of the science behind perspective ultimately, right? Like, this is our overarching term. I want to share, and then I'm going to ask you some questions, Ashley. Rory McIlroy just won the Masters last April. It was the first time he had won the Masters. It had been, from my understanding, kind of a lifelong pursuit. Like, he had won a bunch of majors up until then, but the Masters is the gold standard, right? And he hadn't won it yet. And so for him, it was this wonderful kind of, again, really high-achieving moment for Rory. He was asked, you know, how'd you feel during the match? Kind of walk us through emotionally, psychologically, what was going on. This is what he said, and this is quote, exact quotes from Rory. Should I try to do it in an Irish accent?
Mm-hmm. Yes, please.
No, I'm not going to. He said, yeah, you have knots in your stomach. No, I've had knots in my stomach. Haven't really had much of an appetite all day. I tried to force food down. I tried to force food down. Yeah. My legs felt like jelly. It's those nerves that are natural. They're all good things. In fact, if you weren't feeling like that, I think that's more of a problem. So his interpretation of having knots in his stomach, not having an appetite, having to force food down, and having his legs feel like jelly was something very natural, very normal. Now, if you were to ask those symptoms to, I don't know, high school athlete, maybe high-level college athlete, maybe even a professional athlete, I think immediately they'd be like, ooh, you're not really in the best emotional and psychological state, are you? Because you want to feel loose and you want to feel ready and you always want to feel like you're good to go. Well, you're a human being, first and foremost. And what Rory is saying is it's very natural. In fact, you should feel those things. So his interpretation or his perspective, folks, of many, many wonderful things allowed him to be in this state. And he goes on to talk about in this same interview, you know, the acceptance of that and the reinterpretation of these symptoms, especially physiological symptoms, allowed me to be present. And he talked a lot about presence and how important it is, especially during a 5-hour round of golf, to be present. And it ultimately helped him win the Masters, achieve his lifelong dream.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let me ask you, Ashley. I have like 4 questions. Oh gosh, let me try to, let's just start with one. Based off Rory's experience, how can you relate to that as a professional athlete? And what have you done as a result of those nerves that he's talked about?
Yeah, I feel like when we started working together, I definitely experienced a lot more of these nerves, like the not great appetite or just being extra nervous or anxious or fidgety. And I think I had a hard time battling with those because I thought they were bad. And so then it kind of made them worse. And it kind of took my attention away from like the game. And it was like, oh my gosh, why am I feeling this way? Something's wrong. But then once we started working together and you taught me how to like reinterpret these things and use the reversal theory and be like, oh, actually, these things are okay, and it means I care, and all is good. Then I was just, like, so much more calm about it, and I feel like those quote unquote like symptoms were still there, but not as like worrisome, or they weren't as like effective or distracting. And I learned how to like manage them a lot better, to where like I don't get as nauseous or like nervous as I used to, but I'm still like sometimes fidgety before the game, but my mind is focused on the game. I'm not focused on like, why do I feel this way?
Are some of your, and you just alluded to this, are some of your physiological symptoms to nerves? Is it being fidgety? What would you say like your top three are as a result of nerves, like before a game?
Yeah, I would definitely say like being fidgety, or like tapping my foot, or like chewing on a water bottle or something.
Okay, yeah.
I also feel like loss of appetite was definitely one, but I feel like I've actually like, I wouldn't say fully overcome it, but I've come a long way in like learning how to like manage it and to like just eat better. So I'm usually like just snacking a lot. And then I would also say like my hands get kind of sweaty, or like my armpits will get a little extra sweaty, and stuff like that. But I also have a lot of tools that I use now that like help me with like my pregame kind of like stretching slash meditation breathing techniques that also kind of just like calm me down. But yeah, I can't really sit still. Even like when we're in the tunnel, like waiting to walk out on the field, I'm usually like stretching or like doing something because I just like don't like sitting still.
And you're not forcing yourself to be still. You're not telling yourself, "Ooh, stop being so fidgety. This isn't good. I need to be calm. I need to be focused. I need to be still." It's the acceptance piece. It's reinterpreting, right? That, oh, this is how I actually experience nerves. And instead of combating it and getting rid of it, I'm going to utilize it in some way to where it can be ultimately facilitative, right? That's the whole idea behind these theories and around, ultimately, if we were to climb even further up this ladder, around perspective and how we're viewing these arousal states. It's from the emotional component. It's from the psychological component. Let me ask you now one more question here. If you were to give advice to especially younger athletes around these nerves, I know off camera or offline or whatever before this, we were kind of talking about this. What would be some advice around the nerves that could kind of relate to this core idea of what we're talking about today?
Yeah, I think recognizing first and foremost that you have the nerves, like bringing attention to them. I think a lot of times we'll try and ignore them, and it makes it like even worse or kind of harder to manage. And then reinterpreting those nerves, if it's something that you really care about, I think recognizing that is really important, and not seeing it necessarily as a bad thing, but something that can just help you and something that is preparing you. I think if you are prepared and you've done everything you can to prepare for a game or a match or whatever it may be, or even like a test, then you just have to be like, okay, I did my best. These nerves are because I care and I'm ready and I'm just going to go do my best. So I think bringing that attention to it first and foremost is like the most important key, in my opinion.
You said something really, really important. This really can't work, the reinterpretation, the perspective, if there isn't, what's even the right way to say this? Like, if there isn't truth and evidence behind it. And a huge piece of that is preparation, right? Like, you can't simply go, "Oh, I'm nervous. That's okay. It means I'm care. I really care about this." But do you really care? And is there preparation that has backed up that caring factor? Maybe your nerves are telling you haven't really prepared for this. You should do a lot better next time to be more prepared for this. So even backing up before we're able to have perspective and reinterpret and reappraise, do the work up front, do the deliberate intentional work up front. And then inevitably, when you do have those nerves, this is where this psychological skill set really can be beneficial. Mm-hmm. So I think that's important for a lot of people, right? Mm-hmm. You can't have a Band-Aid approach and just fix this and think that it's going to be helpful. There's obviously preparation and some work that goes in beforehand. So I think that's mm-hmm. important.
Yeah.
Okay. So ending message here to kind of wrap this up and tie a pretty bow on it. Mental toughness. Try to, as a result of listening to this podcast, folks, sit down and think, what does this look like for me? What does this look like for my team? And try to include perspective in there. I'm not saying mental toughness is solely perspective. There's a lot of things, like we mentioned at the very first, that go into this term, this concept of mental toughness. But I 100% agree that it should be a part of it. And mm-hmm. so my challenge to you is to start to try to include that in your training and in your conversations with your team, with your players, and also with yourself. How are you utilizing this PIP acronym, put it into perspective, especially during the trying, challenging moments?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Boom. That's what I got.
Boom. Mic drop. No, I think that's really important. I think when we talk about mental toughness or mental flexibility, another word that comes to mind for me is like mental maturity. I feel like if you're mentally like mature, you're able to reinterpret these things to be most beneficial to you. And you're not, like you said, like you don't have those blinders on and you're not like focused and stressed and spiraling about one small detail, one small piece of information that by itself might be, you know, stressful. But then when you paint the whole picture, then it's like, oh, this is just a small piece of the puzzle. And sorry, I know this comment is going to make us go over. But when you're talking about cognitive reappraisal theory and you're talking about how like sometimes when we're focused on like one little detail, it takes a lot of energy away from like mental energy away from us. I think an area where I've experienced this a lot is like the example that you said, like a coach making a decision that you don't fully understand. And a lot of the times our parents or our friends or teammates will encourage us to go have a conversation with the coach, which I think can be very helpful. But sometimes for me, this might be a hot take. I think if you're mentally able to use these tools and reinterpret, or because like a lot of the times when the coach makes the decisions, there's like a million different reasons why they made the decision that they made, and you're a piece of that puzzle. And sometimes we don't know all the pieces, but we do sometimes spiral in like the way it affects us only. Totally. And so instead of like sometimes I've been in a place where like I'll let that like affect me mentally, and sometimes in order to get it out of my head, then I have a conversation with the coach. But also I've had conversations with coaches where I'm like, that actually really didn't help me. Like it made me more confused. It didn't give me any clarity. And I kind of just gave all my power away to decision that one person's making, and they're making decisions on behalf of 20 something other people. Mm-hmm. So for me, I actually think sometimes it's way more beneficial to be able to use these theories and these tools to reinterpret it to a way that's actually going to help me. And whatever that may be, because there may be a million different scenarios that are all probably true, but which ones are going to help you the most? And a lot of the times you'll see like a player be like, oh, I just wanted to prove the coach wrong. And sometimes that's really helpful and really beneficial. And if that's the story that they want to tell themselves, and that if that's how they want to interpret it, like good on them, like if it's going to help them. Sometimes for me, it's like, oh, like I know so-and-so was hurt, their minutes were this, that, like they're trying to do other things. Like it's not because of my play or whatever. It's the coach making those decisions that's best for the team. And it's like, okay, I'm going to move forward and continue to get better. Or sometimes it is like, oh, I can't believe they did that to me. I'm going to prove them wrong next time, and they're not going to want to take me off the field. So I feel like sometimes we can gain a lot of power by being able to like reinterpret a situation to help us. Instead of like always being like, I need to find out the exact answers, because sometimes that takes more time and energy than it really needs to. But anyway, that's my two cents.
I love that. I love, just to quickly add to that, because it was so great. One of many, many reasons why this is so beneficial, everything you just said, to distill it down, at least in my mind, is what this does is takes you out of your own head. And so especially during challenging, anxiety, stressful-ridden moments, when we can answer the question, put this in, what's your perspective right now? Put it into perspective. It's taking you away from that. Mm-hmm. It's taking you out of your own head. And oftentimes that's the trick to just get over the challenge or to get through that moment of challenge, right? Everything you just said. And I think if we can pause, stop, and actually put these things into perspective, it allows us to do that. And I just hear that so many times in sports, like get out of your own head, and it's cliche, but it's beneficial. Mm-hmm. And one way that we can do that is to change our perspective on how we're viewing things in those moments. So yeah.
Nice. Anyways. Well, I think it's safe to say that our combined ditto of the day is putting things into perspective.
That's a great DOTD. Absolutely.
Yes. Awesome. Okay. Well, thanks, Matt, for sharing. I think this will be really beneficial for parents, coaches, athletes, anyone who's feeling like, you know, they're in their own head. So please like, share, subscribe, send it to a friend who may be struggling with this, because I think we all struggle with this at one point or another. Sure. So yeah, thanks for being here, everyone.
Thank you, everybody. Come back next time.
Bye.
Bye-bye.